The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the April 2018 issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at www.kiwanisfoundation.org. We're going to continue with 2018 baseball preview. We're in the American League West. Now, by way of review, the Astros were number one, the Los Angeles Angels number two, Seattle Mariners number three, Oakland Athletics number four, and we're going to continue with number five, the Texas Rangers. The Rangers are considering using a six-man starting rotation. Now, if they were doing this because they have so many good pitchers, they couldn't pick five, that would be one thing. But Texas is toying with the idea to keep its collection of aging so-so vets fresh. It's worth a try. Last year, the Rangers were 11th in team ERA and runs allowed, with nine players who hit at least 17 homers last year, led by first baseman Joey Gallo, who hit 41. Texas can win some slugfests with the pitching staff that's counting on Matt Moore, 6-15 with a 5.52 ERA with the Giants, to be an upgrade. The Rangers will have to. Moving on to the National League, starting with the East. Number one, the Washington Nationals. Don't tell Steven Strasburg that long balls are given in today's game. The Nationals' righty was the hardest starting pitcher in baseball to homer off, allowing just 13 in 175 and a third innings. He and Max Scherzer give Washington a dominant 1-2 punch on the hill to go along with a lineup that ranked third in the National League in runs. Perennial MVP candidate Bryce Harper, 29 home runs, 87 RBIs, and a .319 batting average, and second baseman Daniel Murphy, 23 home runs, 93 RBIs, and a .322 batting average, are free agents after the season. For the Nationals, a team that has been to the playoffs four of the past 6 years, but hadn't advanced past the divisional round, the time to win is now. Number two, the Philadelphia Phillies. There have been some lean seasons in Philadelphia since the Phillies won the 2008 World Series, but after years of stockpiling young talent and saving money, Philly finally is pointed in the right direction. The team opened up the checkbook to sign free agent first baseman Carlos Santana, 23 home runs, 79 runs batted in, with Cleveland, to inject some pop into a lineup that finished 12th in the league in both runs and homers. The Phillies will also get a boost from having Rhys Hoskins for a full season. The left fielder was called up from the minors on August 10th and hit 18 home runs in 50 games. In a weak division, Philadelphia could be one of the season's surprises. Number three, New York Mets. Just like New York arch rivals, the Mets led their league in home runs last year. Unlike the Yankees, they couldn't make those dingers matter. Injuries decimated the Mets pitching staff. Only Jacob DeGrom, 15-10 with a 3.53 ERA, pitched more than 120 innings. And when two of the team's top pitchers were able to play, they weren't that helpful. Matt Harvey had an ERA of 6.70 in 19 appearances, and Steven Matz had an ERA of 6.08 in 13 starts. New York gave up 5.3 runs per game. It's going to take lots of homers to overcome that kind of pitching. Number four, Atlanta Braves. The Braves traded one of their top offensive players, left fielder Matt Kemp, 19 home runs, 2.76 batting average, to the Dodgers in the offseason. They did it partly to save money and partly because Atlanta has the top outfield prospect in the National League. Ronald Acuna hit .325 with 21 home runs at three levels of the minors last year. The 20-year-old could get his chance. as the Braves showed by turning the shortstop position over to Dansby Swanson, 6 home runs, .232 batting average, the team doesn't have a problem letting players learn at the big league level. The thought of Acuna in the same lineup as Freddie Freeman, 28 home runs, 71 runs batted in, and a .307 batting average, has Atlanta fans rightly excited. And number five, the Miami Marlins. The Marlins have won the World Series twice. Each time, management proceeded to immediately sell off the team's best players. That's happening again in Miami. Only this go-round, there was no championship to soften the blow. The Marlins, who haven't made the playoffs since 2003, were sold to a group that includes Derek Jeter. The former Yankees' great slashed payroll, trading right fielder Giancarlo Stanton, 59 home runs, left fielder Marcell Ozuna, 37 home runs, and center fielder Christian Yelich, 18 home runs with a .282 batting average. Who's left? First baseman Justin Bour, who quietly hit 25 home runs with a .289 average. He and his teammates are in for a long year. National League Central. Number one, the Chicago Cubs. Once again, Chicago had one of the most fearsome lineups in baseball. Behind third baseman Chris Bryant, 29 home runs, 73 runs batted in, and a .295 batting average, the Cubs finished one homer behind the National League leading Mets and Brewers and 2 runs behind the Rockies, who were tops in the league. The question mark is on the mound. The Cubbies said goodbye to their top starter, Jake Arrieta, 14-10 with a 3.53 ERA, and replaced him with Yu Darvish. If they get the Darvish who led a 3.86 ERA and a 209 strikeouts during the regular season with the Rangers and Dodgers, they'll be in great shape. If they get the Darvish who got shelled in the World Series, 0-2, 21.60 ERA, they could be in trouble. Number two, Milwaukee Bucks. Milwaukee tied for the league lead in homers last year. Three players, including third baseman Travis Shaw, hit at least 30, but finished 10th in runs scored. In the offseason, the team focused on adding guys who can get on base but aren't necessarily big boppers. The Brewers benefited from the Marlins' fire sale. Milwaukee picked up outfielder Christian Yelich, 18 home runs, 81 runs batted in, and a .369 on base percentage, who will join a crowded but talented outfield. The team also signed free agent Lorenzo Cain, 15 home runs, 49 runs batted in, and a .300 batting average, one of baseball's top defensive center fielders. With a more balanced attack, the Brewers will be a threat in the Central. Number three, St. Louis Cardinals. St. Louis hasn't had a bona fide slugger since Albert Pujols left town 6 years ago. The Cards tried to fix that by making a run at Marlins star Giancarlo Stanton. The league's top home run hitter went to the Yankees instead. But the Redbirds' consolation prize wasn't too bad. Stanton's Miami teammate Marcell Ozuna, 37 home runs, 124 runs batted in, who was acquired in a trade for 4 prospects. He'll feel well in a lineup that includes left fielder Tommy Pham, who came out of nowhere to hit 23 home runs with a .306 average in 2017. The Cards haven't missed the playoffs for 3 straight seasons since 1997-99. They'll have a decent shot at breaking their 2-year drought. Number four, Pittsburgh Pirates. After last year's 4th-place finish, the Pirates decided to trade away 2 of their highest-paid players. Gone are center fielder Andrew McCutchen, 28 home runs, 88 runs batted in, and right-handed pitcher Garrett Cole, 12-12 with a .426 ERA. Replacing its best hitter and starting pitcher won't be easy, but Pittsburgh has an eye on contending in 2 or 3 years, not right away. So the Pirates will give their young pitchers, Jameson Taillon, 8-7, 4.44 ERA, Chad Kuhl, 8-11, 4.35 ERA, and Tyler Glasnow, 9-2, with a 1.93 ERA in AAA. Time to develop. And they'll hope that the 2017 put up by the 25-year-old first baseman Josh Bell, 26 home runs, 90 RBIs, was just a glimpse of things to come. And finally, in the National League Central, number 5, Cincinnati Reds. If you want to guarantee yourself a souvenir, go to a Reds game and buy a seat in the outfield. Cincinnati had 6 players hit at least 24 dingers last year, led by first baseman Joey Votto. 36 home runs, 100 RBIs, and a .320 batting average. And no staff in baseball gave up more homers than the Reds, which saw 248 of its offerings land in the seats. Cincinnati searched for answers. 8 different pitchers made at least 11 starts, but never found anyone. No one made more than 21. The return of Anthony DeScalfanini, 9-5, 3.28 ERA in 2016, who missed all of last year with an elbow injury, will help, but not enough to make 2018 anything but a disaster. Moving on to the National League West. Number 1, Los Angeles Dodgers. Cody Bellinger was the National League's Rookie of the Year last season. You'll forgive Dodger fans if they're not too impressed. Los Angeles players have made such a feat routine. 14 Los Angeles Dodgers have won the award, which shows just how good the franchise is at fostering young talent. And the current squad is no exception. Shortstop Corey Seager, 22 home runs, 77 RBIs, was the top rookie in 2016. And 26-year-old right fielder Yasiel Puig, 28 home runs, 74 runs batted in, reemerged as a dependable threat. On the mound, Alex Wood, 16-3, 2.72 ERA. Gave L.A. a second unhittable lefty. Clayton Kershaw was his usual spectacular self. The Dodgers' World Series appearance last year was their first in 29 years. The wait won't be as long this time around. Number 2, Arizona Diamondbacks. The D-backs were 2017's pleasant surprise. They won 93 games, getting a serious boost from midseason pickup right fielder J.D. Martinez, 29 home runs in 62 games. But Martinez was a rental. Now that he's gone, Arizona's lineup is less imposing. Still, the D-backs' home run rate and slugging percentage was virtually the same after the trade as it was before. The runs will come, and with left-handed pitcher Robbie Ray, 15-5 with a 2.89 ERA, who led the NHL National League in strikeouts per inning, turning into a stud, Arizona should have enough pitching to again put a little pressure on the Dodgers. Number 3, Colorado Rockies. The Rockies have the last 2 National League batting champs. Center fielder Charlie Blackmon, 37 home runs with a .331 batting average, and second baseman DJ LeMahieu, .348 batting average in 2016. They also have third baseman Nolan Arenado, whose 37 homers in 2017 were his fewest in 3 years. All in all, a good nucleus, but Blackmon and LeMahieu can become free agents after the season, and Arenado can test the market in 2019. So there's an urgency in Colorado. The Rockies spent the offseason fine-tuning a roster that made the wild card game, spending more than $100 million on 3 relievers, most notably Wade Davis. 32 saves with the Cubs. The improved bullpen will be enough to keep Colorado in the postseason picture. Number 4, San Francisco Giants. The Giants' most exciting home run threat missed half of last season with an injury. The good news is that he's healthy. The bad news is that he's a pitcher. Madison Bumgarner, 4.9, 3.32 ERA in 17 starts, homered three times in 36 plate appearances last year, and his .471 slugging percentage was better than any San Francisco regulars. The Giants added a pair of veteran hitters, third baseman Evan Longoria, 20 home runs, 86 runs batted in with the Rays, and center fielder Andrew McCutchen, 28 home runs, 88 RBIs with the Pirates. But that won't be enough to bolster one of the league's most tepid attacks. Perhaps Bumgarner could pitch every day. And number five, San Diego Padres. Somehow San Diego won 71 games last year despite being outscored by more than 200 runs. Instead of thinking about rebuilding, San Diego made moves such as giving free agent first baseman Eric Hosmer 25 home runs, 94 RBIs with the Royals, $144 million over eight seasons, and trading promising pitching prospect Eniel De Los Santos, a 10-6 and a 3.78 ERA in AA, to the Phillies for shortstop Freddy Galvis, 12 home runs with a 2.55 batting average, who will be a free agent after this season. Those moves indicate that San Diego thinks it can challenge immediately. Outside of the improved game of first baseman Will Myers, 30 home runs, 20 SBs, there's little else to suggest that that's the case. Extra innings. Looking for an edge to help you win your fantasy league? Figuring out who's hot, who's not, and who's next is the key? Here are some players to keep an eye on. On the rise, Anthony Rendon, third baseman, Nationals. Rendon finished sixth in the National League MVP voting after batting .301 and 25 homers and 100 RBIs. After steadily improving his numbers since his debut in 2013, he reached career highs in home runs, RBIs, average and on-base and slugging percentage. The 27-year-old will continue this upward trajectory and will be in the MVP conversation. Kyle Schwarber, left fielder, Chicago Cubs. After starring in the 2016 World Series, Schwarber got off to a miserable start last year, hitting just .178 in the first half. After a brief trip to the minors, he found his stroke after the All-Star break, hitting 17 homers in 61 games and batting .253. Consider that first half an aberration. Carlos Carrasco, right-handed pitcher, Indians. Overshadowed by Cy Young Award-winning teammate Corey Kluber, Carrasco quietly led the American League in wins with 18. He also had a career-high 226 strikeouts. He might not surpass Kluber, but he'll cement his place as one of the top pitchers in the game. On the decline, CC Sabathia, left-handed pitcher, New York Yankees. Sabathia had a bounce-back year after four straight seasons of decline. At 37, the big lefty will get run support from the high-powered Yanks, but will be hard-pressed to replicate last year's resurgence. Evan Longoria, third baseman, San Francisco Giants. His power numbers took a big dip last season, and now the 32-year-old is in San Francisco, where his home run total will be affected by a pitcher's park. Robbie Clay, left-handed pitcher, Arizona Diamondbacks. Ray went from giving up more than a hit per inning in 2016 to allowing just 116 over 162 frames last year. And he struck out the same number of batters last year as he did in 2016, in 12 fewer innings. He got great defensive support, though, meaning last year could have been a blip. Prospects to watch. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., third baseman, Toronto Blue Jays. The son of Hall of Famer Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has the same power that made his father a star. The younger Guerrero, 19, hit .323 with 13 home runs in 119 games in the minors last season. He showed impressive discipline for a minor leaguer with 76 walks against 62 strikeouts. He's young, but if he continues to heat up the minors, he could find a spot on the Blue Jays toward the end of the season. Victor Robles, center fielder, Washington Nationals. Called up to the majors in September, Robles hit .250 in 13 games. At his stops in the minors, he was one of the best hitters with a .300 average and 27 stolen bases in 114 games. Nats center fielder Adam Eaton is coming off a season-ending knee injury, so Robles could get a shot in the center early on. And finally, Walker Buehler, right-handed pitcher, Los Angeles Dodgers. Buehler started the season in Class A and finished by making 8 appearances in the majors. While he struggled in his limited action, Buehler's dominance in the minors, 3.35 ERA over 3 levels, indicates he could make the adjustment quickly. Page 48, say what? Broaden your baseball horizons with these obscure facts that will help you sound like a true expert. Dirty business. Road teams began wearing gray uniforms because they didn't have time to do laundry when they were on the road. The home team has traditionally worn white in baseball while the road team dressed in gray. It started the game early days when teams on road trips didn't always have the ability to wash the uniforms and wore the darker colors to hide dirt, separated by berth. Mike Trout and Bryce Harper hit their 150th home runs at the exact same age. Trout and Harper have quite a bit in common as otherworldly talents who took the baseball world by storm at a very young age. They also shared something else. Each was exactly 24 years and 295 days old when he hit his 150th career home run. Moving on to page 47, Slamburger. Fernando Tatis is the only player to hit 2 grand slams in one inning. On April 23, 1999, the Cardinals' third baseman twice came up with the bases loaded in the third inning at Dodger Stadium, and he homered off L.A. pitcher Chan Ho Park both times. Wake me when it's over. The longest game in history lasted 8 hours, 6 minutes, and went 25 innings. The White Sox and the Brewers began a game on May 8, 1984, and finished it on May 9th. An American League rule prohibited innings from starting later than 1 a.m., so the game was suspended after 17 innings, tied 3-3. The next afternoon, the teams retook the field. The Brewers scored 3 runs in the top of the 21st, but the White Sox countered with 3 of their own to tie the game. Finally, in the bottom of the 25th, Chicago slugger Harold Baines hit a solo home run to win it. Switch hitter. Joel Youngblood got a hit for 2 different teams in 2 different cities on the same day. On August 4, 1982, Youngblood batted third for the Mets and drove in 2 runs with a third-inning single against the Cubs at Wrigley Field in Chicago. Then he was pulled from the game because he had been traded to the Montreal Expos. Youngblood boarded a flight to Philadelphia, where the Expos were playing that night, entered the game in the bottom of the 6th, and struck a single in the top of the 7th. Wham of a cam from the pages of Sports Illustrated. Duke-bound, lottery-bound, Cam Reddish is not the first of his kind, but his skill set just may reset expectations for the possibilities of the modern basketball player. At 6'7", Cameron Reddish sees easily over most guards but isn't burly enough at 210 pounds to bang with the big men on the low block, just right for a small forward. At 18, he is only 2 inches shorter and 10 pounds lighter than 5-time NBA All-Star small forward Paul George. Read about Reddish on the recruiting website and you'll likely see him listed as small forward. But Reddish has probably spent more time at point guard during his high school career, deftly navigating ball screens, rifling passes into tight windows, and sinking 3-point shots off the dribble, and harassing opposing backcourts with his 7-foot-1 wingspan and lateral quickness. As basketball teams increasingly covered versatile players, the difference between the position that appears to fit Reddish physically and the one that optimizes his perimeter skills is immaterial. In an era in which the Sixers' Ben Simmons can become the NBA's number one draft pick and Rookie of the Year front runner as a 6'10" point guard, and Draymond Green can hold down the center spot in the Warriors' best lineup at 6'7", Reddish illustrates a fascinating phenomenon. He belongs to no position and to every position. By learning to play like a point guard, Reddish has elevated an already tantalizing high ceiling. He and his ready-made name for the Cameron Crazies is headed to Duke next fall. Already, he is an early candidate to be selected near the top of the 2019 lottery. Draft expert Jonathan Givony pegged him as the number two pick in his most recent mock. Reddish, who calls basketball his heartbeat, says that the only thing he does that are not school or hoops related are playing video games on his PS34 or messing with his younger brother, Aaron, a freshman at Westtown School, the same boarding school in Westchester, Pennsylvania that Reddish attends. The 2016-17 team is the subject of a documentary that can be seen on SITV. When Reddish isn't on a court, there's a good chance he's staring at one on a screen. His consumption of YouTube highlight reels is obsessive. On a typical weekday, Reddish rises at 6 a.m., makes a short trek to the West Town gym, and gets up as many shots as he can before 7 a.m. Breakfast in the dining hall. When he shoots, he denies himself the reward of hearing the swoosh of every made three free throw in mid-range, instead pumping Lil Uzi Vert through his headphones. Why? Reddish admits to being creeped out by the creaking sound that reverberates around the otherwise vacant gym. I hate hearing things, he says. Reddish could play the one before he grew to the size of a small ball four. Henry Fairfax, Reddish's coach at the Haverford School, an all-boys prep school on Philadelphia's main line, knew that Reddish had the skill to play point guard, but he actually had another guard who could handle the ball and decision make. After playing varsity as an eighth and ninth grader at Haverford, Reddish transferred to Westtown, a pastoral 600-acre institution with stately red brick buildings and a 14-acre lake located about half hour southwest of his home in Norristown, Pennsylvania. There are criticisms of Reddish's game. He can be passive, though this is a label commonly affixed to the gifted for whom the sport often appears to be easy. Reddish does concede that he doesn't always go hard, which I've got to fix. That flaw is drowned out by a hype that he will only increase in the 16 months between now and the 2019 NBA draft. The projections range from the optimistic yet realistic. A Paul George type of player, says Rob Brown, the program director of Reddish's AAU team, to the borderline absurd. I think actually he's going to be a 6'8 version of Chris Paul, Berger says. Today, that distinction is mostly academic, and coaches can expect positive results when they move him up and down the lineup. Reddish's position might remain uncertain, but his future is radiantly clear. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at www.kiwanisfoundation.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138.